Chapter 48. Miller. "You are and you aren't," the Eros feed said through a semi-random drumming of static. "You are and you aren't. You are and you aren't." The little ship shuddered and bumped. From a crash couch, one of the OPA techs called out a string of obscenities, remarkable more for inventiveness than actual rancor. Miller closed his eyes, trying to keep the micro-G adjustments of their non-standard docking from nauseating him. After days of joint-aching acceleration and an equally bruising braking routine, the small shifts and movements felt arbitrary and strange. "You are." He'd spent some time listening to the news feeds. 3 days after they'd left Tycho, the news of Protogen's involvement with Eros broke. Amazingly, Holden hadn't been the one to do it. Since then, the corporation had gone from total denial to blaming a rogue subcontractor to claiming immunity under an Earth Defense Secret statute. It didn't sound good for them. Earth's blockade of Mars was still in place, but attention had shifted to the power struggle within Earth, and the Martian Navy had slowed its burn, giving the Earth forces a little more breathing room before any permanent decisions had to be made. It looked like they'd postponed Armageddon. For a few weeks, anyway. Miller found he could take a certain joy in that. It also left him tired. More often, he listened to the voice of Eros. Sometimes he watched the video feeds, too, but usually he just listened. Over the hours and days, he began to hear, if not patterns, at least common structures. Some of the voices spooling out of the dying station were consistent. Broadcasters and entertainers who were overrepresented in the audiophiles archives, he guessed. There seemed to be some specific tendencies in, for want of a better term, the music of it, too. Hours of random, fluting static and snatched bits of phrases would give way, and Eros would latch on to some word or phrase, fixating on it with greater and greater intensity until it broke apart, and the randomness poured back in. Aren't, Miller thought. And the ship suddenly shoved itself up, leaving Miller's stomach about half a foot from where it had been. A series of loud clanks followed, and then the brief wail of a klaxon. "Dieu, Dieu," someone shouted. "Bom sum vamen roja. Going to fry it, fry us toda." There was the usual polite chuckle that the same joke had occasioned over the course of the trip, and the boy who'd made it, a pimply belter no more than 15 years old, grinned with pleasure at his own wit. If he didn't stop that shit, someone was going to beat him with a crowbar before they got back to Tycho. But Miller figured that someone wasn't him. A massive jolt forward pushed him hard into the couch, and then gravity was back. The familiar 0.3G. Maybe a little more. Except that with the airlocks pointing toward ships down, the pilot had to grapple the spinning skin of Eros's belly first. The spin gravity made what had been the ceiling the new floor. The lowest rank of couches was now the top, and while they rigged the fusion bombs to the docks, they were all going to have to climb up onto a cold, dark rock that was trying to fling them off into the vacuum. Such were the joys of sabotage. Miller suited up. After the military-grade suits of the Rocinante, the OPA's motley assortment of equipment felt like third-hand clothes. His suit smelled of someone else's body, and the Mylar faceplate had a deformation where it had cracked and been repaired. He didn't like thinking about what had happened to the poor bastard who'd been wearing it. The magnetic boots had a thick layer of corroded plastic and old mud between the plates and a triggering mechanism so old that Miller could feel it click on and off even before he moved his foot. He had the image of the suit locking on to Eros and never letting go. The thought made him smile. "You belong with me," his own private Julie had said. It was true, and now that he was here, he felt perfectly certain that he wasn't going to leave. He'd been a cop for too long, and the idea of trying to reconnect to humanity again filled him with a presentiment of exhaustion. He was here to do the last part of his job. and then he was done. "Oi, Pampo!"
"I'm coming," Miller said. "Hold your damn horses. It's not like the station's going anyplace."
"A rainbow is a circle you can't see, can't see, can't see," Eros said in a child's sing-song voice. Miller turned down the volume of his feed. The rocky surface of the station had no particular purchase for the suits and control Waldos. Two other ships had made polar landings where there was no spin gravity to fight against, but the Coriolis would leave everyone with a subliminal nausea. Miller's team had to keep to the exposed metal plates of the dock, clinging like flies looking down into the starlit abyss. Engineering the placement of the fusion bombs wasn't trivial work. If the bombs didn't pump enough energy into the station, the surface might cool enough to give someone another chance to put a science team on it before the penumbra of the sun swallowed it and whatever parts of the Nauvoo were still clinging to it. Even with the best minds of Tycho, there was still the chance that the detonations wouldn't sync up. If the pressure waves traveling through the rock amplified in ways they hadn't anticipated, the station could crack open like an egg, spreading the protomolecule through the wide, empty track of the solar system like scattering a handful of dust. But the difference between success and disaster might be literally a question of meters. Miller crawled up the airlock and out to the station surface. The first wave of technicians were setting up resonant seismographs, the glow of the work lights and readouts the brightest thing in the universe. Miller set his boots on the wide swath of a ceramic steel alloy and let the spin stretch the kinks out of his back. After days in the acceleration couch, the freedom felt euphoric. One of the techs raised her hands, the physical belter idiom that called for attention. Miller upped the suit volume.
Insecte rampant sur ma peau.
With a stab of impatience, he switched from the Eros feed to the team channel.
"Got to move," a woman's voice said. "Too much splash back here. We have to get to the other side of the docks."
"These go on for almost 2 kilometers, Miller said.
"Yes," she agreed. "We can unmoor and move the ship under power, or we can tow it. We've got enough lead line."
"Which one's fastest? We don't have a lot of spare time here."
"Towing."
"Tow it then," Miller said.
Slowly the ship rose. 20 small, crawling transport drones clinging to leads like they were hauling a great metallic zeppelin. The ship was going to stay with him, here in the station, strapped to the rock like a sacrifice to the gods. Miller walked with the crew as they crossed the wide, closed bay doors. The only sounds were the tapping of his soles as the electromagnets jolted onto the surface, and then a tick when they let go again. The only smells were his own body and the fresh plastic of the air recycler. The metal under his feet shone like someone had cleaned it. Any dust or pebbles had been hurled away long ago. They worked fast to place the ship, arm the bombs, and fit the security codes, everyone tacitly aware of the great missile that had been the Nauvoo speeding toward them. If another ship came down and tried to disarm the trap, the ship would send synchronizing signals to all the other OPA bomb ships studding the moon's surface. 3 seconds later, the surface of Eros would be scrubbed clean. The spare air and supplies were loaded off the ship, bundled together and ready for reclamation. No reason to waste the resources. Nothing horrific crawled out of an airlock and tried to attack the crew, which made Miller's presence during the mission entirely superfluous. Or maybe not. Maybe it was just a ride. When everything was done that could be, Miller sent the all clear, relayed through the now dead ship system. The return transport appeared slowly, a dot of light that grew gradually brighter and then spread. The null G boarding web strung out like scaffolding. At the new ship's word, Miller's team turned off their boots and fired simple maneuvering thrusters, either from their suits or, if the suits were too old, from shared ablative evacuation shells. Miller watched them drop away.
"Colvan roll, Pampa,"
Giogu said from someplace. Miller wasn't sure which of them he was at this distance.
This tube don't sit.
I'm not coming, Miller said.
So, okay?
I decided. I'm staying here.
There was a moment of silence. Miller had been waiting for this. He had the security codes. If he needed to crawl back into the shell of their old ship and lock the door behind him, he could. But he didn't want to. He'd prepared his arguments. He would only be going back to Tycho as a political pawn for Fred Johnson's negotiations. He was tired and old, in a way that years didn't describe. He'd already died on Eros once, and he wanted to be here to finish it. He'd earned that much. Giogu and the others owed it to him. He waited for the boy to react, to try to talk him out of it.
All correct, then, Giogu said. Buona morte.
Buona morte, Miller said, and shut off his radio. The universe was silent. The stars below him shifted slowly but perceptibly as the station he hung from spun. One of those lights was the Rosinante. Two others were the ships Holden had been sent out to stall. Miller couldn't pick them out. Julie floated beside him, her dark hair floating in the vacuum, the stars shining through her. She looked peaceful.
If you had it to do again, she said, if you could do it all over from the beginning.
I wouldn't, he said.
He watched the OPA transport ship start up its engines, glowing gold and white, and pull away until it was a star again. A small one, and then lost. Miller turned and considered the dark, empty moonscape and the permanent night. He just needed to be with her for another few hours, and they would both be safe. They would all be safe. It was enough. Miller found himself smiling and weeping, the tears tracking up from his eyes and into his hair.
It's going to be fine, Julie said.
I know, Miller said.
He stood silently for almost an hour, then turned and made his slow, precarious way back to the sacrificed ship, down the airlock, and into the dim belly. There was enough residual atmosphere that he didn't need to sleep in his suit. He stripped naked, chose an acceleration couch, and curled up on the hard blue gel. Not 20 meters away, 5 fusion devices, powerful enough to outshine the sun, waited for a signal. Above him, everything that had once been human in Eros Station changed and reformed, pouring from one shape to another like Hieronymus Bosch made real. And still, almost a day away, the Nauvoo, the hammer of God, hurtled toward him. Miller set his suit to play some old pop tunes he'd enjoyed when he was young, and let himself be sung to sleep. When he dreamed he'd found a tunnel at the back of his old hole on Ceres that meant he would at last, be free. His last breakfast was a hard kibble bar and a handful of chocolate scrounged from a forgotten survival pack. He ate it with tepid recycled water that tasted of iron and rot. The signals from Eros were almost drowned by the oscillating frequencies blasting out from the station above him, but Miller made out enough to know where things stood. Holden had won, much as Miller had expected him to. The OPA was responding to 1,000 angry accusations from Earth and Mars, and, in the true and permanent style, factions within the OPA itself. It was too late. The Nauvoo was due in hours now. The end was coming. Miller put on his suit for the last time, turned out the lights, and crawled back up the airlock. For a long moment, the exterior release didn't respond, the safety lights glowing red, and he had a stab of fear that he would spend his last moments there, trapped in a tube like a torpedo ready to fire. But he cycled the lock's power, and it opened. The Eros feed was wordless now, with only a soft murmuring like water over stone. Miller walked out across the wide mouth of the docking bays. The sky above him turned, and the Nauvoo rose from the horizon like the sun. His splayed hand, held at full arm's length, wasn't big enough to cover the glow of its engines. He hung by his boots, watching the ship approach. The Phantom Julie watched with him. If he'd done the math right, the Nauvoo's impact site would be at the center of Eros's major axis. Miller would be able to see it when it happened, and the giddy excitement in his chest reminded him of being young. It would be a show. Oh, it would be something to see. He considered recording it. His suit would be able to make a simple visual file and stream the data out in real time. But no. This was his moment. His and Julie's. The rest of humanity could guess what it had been like, if they cared. The massive glow of the Nauvoo filled a quarter of the sky now, and the full circle of it was free of the horizon. The Eros feed's soft murmur shifted to something more clearly synthetic, a rising, spiraling sound that reminded him for no particular reason of the green, sweeping radar screens of ancient films. There were voices at the back of it, but he couldn't make out the words, or even the language. The great torch of the Nauvoo was a full half of the sky, the stars around it blotted out by the light of full burn. Miller's suit chirped a radiation warning, and he shut it off. A manned Nauvoo would never have sustained a burn like that. Even in the best couch, the thrust gravity would have pulped bones. He tried to guess how fast the ship would be going when it hit. Fast enough. That was all that mattered. Fast enough. There, in the center of the fiery bloom, Miller saw a dark spot. No more than the dot of a pencil's tip. The ship itself. He took a deep breath. When he closed his eyes, the light pressed red through his lids. When he opened them again, the Nauvoo had length, shape. It was a needle, an arrow, a missile, a fist rising from the depths. For the first time in memory, Miller felt awe. Eros shouted, "Don't you fucking touch me!" Slowly, the bloom of engine fire changed from a circle to an oval, to a great feathery plume, the Nauvoo itself showing silver in rough profile. Miller gaped. The Nauvoo had missed. It had turned. It was right now, speeding past Eros and not into it. But he hadn't seen any kind of maneuvering rockets fire. And how would you turn something that big, moving that quickly, so abruptly, that it would veer off between one breath and the next without also tearing the ship apart? The acceleration G alone. Miller looked at the stars, as if there was some answer written in them. And to his surprise, there was. The sweep of the Milky Way, the infinite scattering of stars were still there. But the angles had changed. The rotation of Eros had shifted. Its relation to the plane of the ecliptic. For the Nauvoo to change course at the last minute without falling apart would have been impossible. And so it hadn't happened. Eros was roughly 600 cubic kilometers. Before Protogen, it had housed the second largest active port in the belt. And without so much as overcoming the grip of Miller's magnetic boots, Eros Station had dodged.